Time to pull up a chair and talk some Dynasty football. I am your host, JJ Wenner, and this is the Rider Dynasty podcast presented by Gridiron Ratings. Your path to the title starts with Gridiron Ratings. Now, tonight we get a peek at the injury updates for the upcoming NFL draft, plus some draft day trivia, and we all get a moment to stump for our favorite rookies. Joining me is Big Daddy Don Detweiler. Hi, man. How are you doing this evening?
Dude, I'm great. I love it. Tomorrow's a big show. It's the big time. We're going to get so much clarity. It'll be fun.
It will be. And joining us from the Next Man Up Injury Podcast, you can find him at Fantasy Ferret on Twitter. 3 weeks in a row, our returning champion, Matthew Walters. What's going on, Matt?
You know, it's going good. I'm glad I've been able to be on the pods the last few weeks, and I'm excited for tonight because it's definitely more my specialty of getting to talk about the injuries of these upcoming rookies.
It is good that you are here because it is not my specialty, but somebody else whose specialty it is, also from the Next Man Up Injury Podcast. You can find him on Twitter sometimes at KAllen_4, a true Georgia peach. My friend, Kyle Allen. How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing great. Let me say, hopping back on here. I love you too, Matthew. Hopping back on here is like, I don't know. It's like when you're in middle school and you finally get back to school the first day. You see all your buddies again that you haven't seen all summer. It just feels right. Happy to be here. Thank y'all for having us on. Excited to get into the nitty gritty of some rookie injury stuff.
Well, we are excited to have you here as always. Love you. Miss you. And we're glad to see you. But before we jump into the episode, I just wanted to take a moment and share a little bit of information from our going slowly. Ooh. There we go. The Gridiron Ratings has published our rookie draft guide, over 140 pages of rookie profiles for both offensive and IDP rookies. There's positional breakdowns, integrated draft boards. Here's an example of a layout for Pierre Strong Jr., our RB13. Now, this is only $15. I had the pleasure of editing the guide, and it even impressed this guy, and I don't impress easy. So make sure you go to gridironratings.com and check out our rookie draft guide. I believe, Matthew, you worked on that, correct?
Yeah, I did a couple of the write-ups on it. I believe I even did one of with the rookie I'm going to pound the table for tonight. But yeah, it's awesome. So obviously I'm biased, but it's awesome. And I think as far as smaller groups that have produced a draft guide, I think it's fire and one of the better ones.
It is a bargain. Like I said, over 140 pages, offense and defense.
It's like 10 cents a page.
Exactly. What a bargain when you break it down like that.
Well, never knew you were into statistics that much, Matthew. Wow, that was impressive math. Well,
wait, he's working an R over there to figure those numbers out.
Put the glass
and now the news. A recent flurry of reports, I'll put that in quotes, label Alabama offensive tackle Evan Neal as a notable medical risk. Well, who better to talk about notable medical risk than Kyle Allen? Kyle, what's going on with Evan Neal?
Yeah, so there's been some rumors circulating. Several teams have concerns about him, about both hip and knee ailments. I did a little bit of research this afternoon trying to figure out if there were any specific concerns. Obviously he dealt with some injuries in college, but I couldn't find any reports that said any teams had concerns about a specific thing, like pointing to an ACL or a labrum or anything like that. There was some circulating rumors that he had to undergo a medical recheck at the combine, but per his personal coach on Twitter, he said, and I quote, "Neal was not a medical recheck and was medically cleared at the combine. Dude hasn't missed a workout since the national championship," end quote. So, you know, it does sound kind of coach speaky, and it is his personal coach. It's not like it's coming from Nick Saban or coming from a NFL team scout, but it should be a little bit of a, I guess, a comfort to those that are looking to draft him.
Awesome. Speaking of big left tackles. Matthew, Cam Robinson has signed a 3-year, $54 million extension with the Jags. What do you think the chances are that they still go with an offensive lineman with either the first or the 33rd pick?
I think it's high. You just got your franchise quarterback last year, whether you believe in Lawrence or not, they believed in him. You got to protect the guy. So you got to add to that line. They were terrible last year. Now there was a lot of moving parts with the coach and everything like that to the reason the Jags were terrible, but you gotta keep your guy upright. And so I think there's a very, very high chance that at least at the 33rd pick, they go offensive line. And I've seen reports of even that first pick.
Don, any thoughts on that? Who could they get at 33?
33 is kind of an interesting spot because unless they're going to go with the center from Iowa, Tyler Linderbaum, you're kind of in a bit of a no man's land. There's a possibility that the Texas A&M tackles, it's more likely guard Kenyon Green would be there, but it's kind of a no man's land. Really, you're in that gulf between the high end and the next tier. So unless they're looking to the interior of the offensive line at that point, there's probably not a comparable player right there.
Well, sticking with the draft, draftniks are concerned, Don, about George Pickens after reports over, I mean, I guess according to Mike Fisher, right, writing for Fan Nation, a coach asserts that Pickens has just so many red flags, and they're big red flags. Are you concerned about George Pickens, like off-field behavior?
I haven't heard much of anything about off-field behavior with him. The on-field talent is so great, and he's starting to kind of settle into that 50th prospect type range. So we're talking top to mid round two. And at that point, the monetary risk isn't so much there that the need of teams will probably start to outweigh that. And that's where we start to find guys who have those kind of questions about them anyway. So I think the value and where he's kind of settling in the draft process are going to wash each other out. So I don't think it's going to be anything. And the chances of him being a dynamic player are very high. So I think the risk outweighs the risk. Risk.
Yeah, I totally
agree. Well said, my friend. Yeah. I have to agree with you, especially if he falls to the second round, which most mock drafts have him falling somewhere in the second round. I know he's generally there whenever I'm messing around on PFF with their mock draft simulator. He's always staring right at me. But I always say, I already took Jameson Williams, George Pickens. I'm not taking you. But that's just how I draft. I end up with the same players every time. But anyway, gentlemen, that's enough of the news. Let's get to the main topic. Tomorrow, creeps in this petty pace from day to day. But Shakespeare, it ain't creeping no more. The first round of the NFL draft is tomorrow. And we are excited to welcome Kyle and Matt, both here from our sister pod, Next Man Up, to discuss rookie injury reports. Now, I know I just spoke about him, but where are we going to start, gentlemen?
Yeah, let's kick this thing off with Jameson Williams. So he suffered an ACL tear back on January 10th, actually during the national championship with Alabama. So we're about 15 weeks out now. His agent has actually posted some workout videos already. They showed him doing a lot of footwork drills. It wasn't full speed, not running, cutting, that kind of thing, but some footwork drills, doing some runs with a weighted sled, showing off catching and doing things like that. So yeah, it's a little bit of a teaser, but it's encouraging that, I mean, already 15 weeks out, you think about an ACL, like that's a year-long injury. But I mean, it's impressive that he's already getting out on the field. I found an interesting quote by Jessica Flynn, who's a doctor, but also a injury analyst and writes for a Boston sports page. She said, objectively, this guy's a game changer and his injury is not. She's confident that he's going to make a full return, and I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. I know I'm going to segue a little bit, let Matthew talk about it. I know Eric, our third member of the Next Man Up podcast, wrote a really great article last year about Saquon Barkley and recovering from ACL injuries. So, Matthew, I know you had some stuff to say about that.
Yeah, with Eric's article, I pulled some data from it because it really was a good article. And both Cortland Sutton and Saquon were coming back from injuries, and he compared running backs returning versus wide receivers, and he pulled peer-reviewed article, medical journal articles that dealt with this issue. And basically what they found is wide receiver groups had significantly decreased performance after ACL surgery when compared with pre-injury performance 1 year out. But they all have career similar lengths versus someone that tore an ACL. So overall for a career, ACL does not really affect the overall career of a wide receiver. But that 1 year out, it really does affect them. There's a lot of cutting. There's a lot of jumping, cutting, moving involved with the wide receiver that you're not back to game speed quite at a year. And with incoming rookies having that injury, you're also missing out on rookie training camps, summer workouts. There's a lot more that goes into this than just the injury recovery itself. So personally, in redraft, I'm avoiding rookie ACL injuries. Now, when we're talking dynasty, that's a different question because it doesn't really affect their long-term outlook, which is what we're looking for in dynasty. But I think there's this notion that Jameson Williams is going to get drafted by Kansas City and just be Tyreek Hill, just plug him in. It's going to be fine. He'll be there.
Right.
I'd be surprised if he makes it that far. I think he might end up going in the middle of the first.
Oh, for sure. And that's a big if on even if he lands at Kansas City. But
so we're looking at
what was that?
Did we freeze?
All right, so up next, John.
So, continuing on, we have John Mechie, who same injury, but just slightly ahead on the time schedule. But even with the time,
I am not sure. Can anybody hear me?
Going in and out, JJ.
Yeah,
in and out.
So, JJ's doing the robot. We're just gonna
speak if you can.
We're gonna take a brief intermission.
It's okay. So continuing on, we have John Mechie, same injury, a little bit sooner on the time. I believe it was about a month ahead of Jameson Williams. But even then, I found that, and I think I found another article that mentioned pretty much NFL. It's always 9 months. No matter what, on them returning at the soonest. So like I said, with Jameson, you're going to miss out on a lot of rookie training camps, but even 9 months for Mechie, which was at the beginning of December that he injured it, puts him at what, September-ish at the soonest of being able to return. And Jameson, right, just a month later, October. And then, like I mentioned, they're missing training camp and stuff like that. So once again, long-term outlook, maybe Mechie is good to go, but in the short term, I mean, don't expect a lot. They're rookie years. I don't know. Kyle, what do you think about?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Obviously, you know, redraft, we're going to be careful and be, you know, keep that in mind, but we're looking at a dynasty perspective. I have no long-term concerns for these guys. And recently I've noticed, and I pulled some data on it, I've noticed that it seems like people are coming back faster from ACL tears than they have in the past. I mean, to give an example, George Pickens that Don was talking about earlier, he tore his ACL during spring practice in 2021, and he was playing at the end of this season for Georgia. He actually had made an impact in the college football playoffs, made a huge catch and made an impact in the national championship, and was big for Georgia down the stretch. If nothing else, he was, you know, out there as a decoy, but he was able to contribute and actively participate. And I mean, that's like I off the top of my head can't do the math. We'll ask Matthew, the stats expert, to do it. But looking back, you know, he made a very fast recovery. It was definitely under a year. He was back on the field. So I'd expect him to be healthy and ready to go, obviously, before either of these guys, but
I think it was right at 9 months with Pickens that
And he was back playing Division I football in the SEC, competing for a national championship. Yep. But there's no question about the level of performance there.
And it's interesting because the things that Georgia was asking him to do, all they ever asked him to do was run a go route. Just go.
Yeah. Mm, well, and he did it well. Found some interesting words from Lyle Kane, who's the team doctor for Alabama, talking about both Mechie and Williams. He was saying that they look really good to be ready to go by July or August for camp. He thinks both of them will be ready to play by the time the season starts, which is certainly encouraging. Expects them to make a full recovery. They do a lot of studies with something called the Catapult GPS monitors, where they monitor how players are able to take off from the line. They actually use them all the time in practice, both in the NFL at college. So it kind of measures, you know, body statistics and speed and things. So they're able to see the players pre-injury and post-injury, and they're not able to tell a huge difference between the two once the player gets recovered. So that's certainly a good indicator that they're going to be back to 100% once they kind of get their strength back up.
Well, that is fantastic news. Yeah, for the two Alabama guys. What about going to the opposite coast? Talking a little USC.
Drake London. So, yeah, Drake London, he had a right ankle fracture in October. He came down very similar to how kind of Dak Prescott injured his ankle. Obviously not to the extent that Prescott injured his ankle with that full dislocation. And if you've seen the video, it's quite funny when he tries to slam his foot back into place. But anyway... The good news with London is there was no ligament damage along with it. It was just a pure fracture. Now, there was reports that he had surgery. I couldn't find basically any more than a Twitter post that someone reported it. I couldn't find what surgery was done. I would imagine, and maybe Kyle can spread some more light on to what might go into that surgery, but they would probably just put a plate in to kind of help hold the bone. Yep. In place to make sure it heals properly. But he was unable to compete at the combine. At his pro day, he kind of had a hamstring slight injury that he stopped from like running the 40. So we don't really have full testing numbers on him, but I'm not really worried about his return to play. If you think Drake London's going to be a stud in the NFL, then injury wise, I'm not concerned. I don't know, Kyle, if you have any concerns there.
Yeah, no, based off of that, the fact that he's already been medically cleared tells me he's been working out. I mean, the slight hamstring injury, they ended up pushing his pro day back like 10 days. So I don't think that it certainly wasn't anything severe if it only pushed back his pro day 10 days. They just wanted to give him a little time so they knew he'd be 100%. If anything, I would guess that maybe he was even just dealing with some cramping, wanted to make sure he was ready to go. I mean, the pro day is a big deal. Obviously, you know, it has a pretty big bearing on draft stock and what scouts think of you, so obviously they're not going to hesitate to back that up a little bit if he's not feeling 100%. So I'm excited to see what he can do in the league. Big body receiver, obviously a lot of talent. USC's put out some pretty good receiver talent lately, so you know, maybe he can follow in the footsteps of some of those, like early Juju and Amon-Ra St. Brown last year, and put up some big numbers for somebody this year.
Let's not forget about Bobby Trees is still kicking around the NFL, right? Gotta love good old Bobby Trees.
Now, somebody injuries.
Coming back from a little bit of a worse injury, Justin Ross.
Yeah, Justin Ross is an interesting one. I want to take a minute to talk about two separate things for him. Most recently, he had a stress fracture in his foot at the end of 2021. When you think of these, you think of players like Derrick Henry or like Debo Samuel, how they've dealt with them. These things can kind of be a nagging injury that take time to recover. There's not as good blood flow in the foot, so oftentimes these kind of stress fractures don't heal as fast as one would think when you think of a fracture or something like that. He has been medically cleared since the accident. If there's any consolation, the re-injury rate for the specific fracture that he suffered is less than 10%. So he's got a pretty good prognosis moving forward. He's been cleared from it. I'm not too concerned about that. I know last year we talked about it at length with Justin Ross before the season started, is there were some concerns about if he'd ever even play football again. It was discovered in the offseason in 2020, I believe, or maybe during the season, that he had a congenital thing, a birth defect where two of the vertebrae in his neck were actually fused together. And so he ended up having to have surgery to resolve that or secure it. I guess depends on how you want to talk about it. It caused him to have several different kind of stinger injuries throughout his career, which is when you get hit and you suddenly have what we refer to as a radiculopathy. So like a pain, a numbness, a tingling, something that goes down an arm. And so the solution for that is they go in, they do a surgery called a cervical fusion. And it sounds really scary, but ultimately what it is they go in and they put a little tiny plate on the front of the vertebra. They go in through your neck, they move your throat and everything to the side. It's pretty gnarly. But they fuse those two or three vertebra. In his case, it was two, I believe. I don't want to speak out of class on this, but I believe it was two. They fuse them together. They put in a spacer to replace the disc between the vertebra, and you're good to go. For reference, this is the same type of surgery that Peyton Manning had when he had neck surgery, and he came back and won the Super Bowl after it. So,
yeah, but we do all remember what Peyton Manning looked like when he won that Super Bowl.
He was also like 74 years old, so
yeah,
he came back, he played NFL football at a high level and won a championship, is the point I'm trying to get across. So, am I worried about that moving forward? No. Don't have a lot of concerns about that moving forward, but I know it certainly raises a lot of question marks.
Now, do you think he would be injury prone? I'm sorry.
Hey,
I'm just kidding.
Good night. I'm gonna log off.
I just like throwing that question in every once in a while because it always pisses off all the medical staff.
Not based off of that.
No, but going on with what Kyle's saying, ignoring the injury prone comment from JJ.
It's a curse word.
I think there's, with Justin Ross, you're going to get your answers in the draft on how concerned NFL teams are about his injury, because kid put up 1,000 yards his freshman season at Clemson. Immense talent, but then has this injury, blah, 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 blah. Like, theoretically, what he's done minus injuries, he should be a top 3-round talent. But if he drops, he drops, he drops. Okay, that's telling us that NFL teams are at least concerned about it. And if they tell us that, then maybe we should be concerned a little bit about it. And from another side of things, I know it got brought up on kind of the mock draft. I forget who said it, but they said they threw out the film from this final year. And I brought up, can you do that? Because maybe he is scared to get hit in the neck, head area now due to this surgery, due to his stingers that he had. I'm not saying he is, but it's something to be considered for sure.
Definitely something to keep in mind that he might be scared of ridiculopathy.
Well, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that, ridiculopathy.
Close.
Nope. All right. I'll get it.
Good enough.
Practice. All right. Unique, well, enough of these tiny guys on the outside. Let's get to like quarterbacks. What is the deal with Carson Strong?
So Carson Strong has what's called osteochondritis dissecans.
Okay. Come on now.
I love our
You're
world.
Just making words up. Both of you.
I it feels like that sometimes. But in this, basically, to make it super simple, it's where your bone in your knee or other joints can happen in multiple places, but usually the knee kind of breaks away and starts to die and becomes brittle and like a small chip of it. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't heal properly due to lack of blood supply, like I was talking about with the stress fractures and whatnot. So very similar kind of. But what's scary to me about Carson Strong is he's been dealing with this all the way back since high school. He had surgery in high school to try to fix this and help with it. He had surgery in college to try to fix this and help with it, and still having issues for it. So probably more than anyone else so far, this is a giant injury red flag. And NFL teams, I mean, there was talks of like Carson Strong could be a first round pick and blah, 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 blah. And his stock has plummeted. I mean, it's still probably going to go in the second or third round, but his stock has plummeted because of this injury. And also, I mean, it's not like he was the most mobile guy anyway. but he's a statue out there that just doesn't move at all. And what was that, JJ? You looked like you had a...
So is this a type of injury that's going to progressively get worse, or it is what it is?
It can. It's not right. A guaranteed thing that it's going to get worse. It can. A lot of times the surgery that they do to treat it, they use donor bone from a different place in your leg, kind of implant it to try to promote that bone growth. And so it's something where sometimes the surgery fails, or later on, you know, it kind of gets worse. So there's no guarantees with it. There is an inherent risk that it will come back. Obviously, if you know somebody has this kind of injury, there's a risk that it can come back, but it's not a guaranteed thing.
This sounds like zombie knee.
Kinda.
It's a little concerning. Do we know which knee is it? Certainly. Do we know?
I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I don't remember off the top of my
head.
I think
it's right, which would be plant leg for him.
Mm. Which, in my mind, makes it worse.
Yeah.
Because you are theoretically using it more, and especially to drive the football down the field and stuff like that.
And that's also the one that's more apt to get hit when it's planted. Yep. Okay.
Exactly.
All right, and if he ever goes to Orlando, it's Disney.
Oh.
Well, thanks for coming to the pod. Hope your ridiculitis clears up.
So close. As
you hang out with your vertebras.
He is a dad now.
That was a good one, JJ.
Thanks. Last up, and I know you guys just threw this guy on here because I'm an IDP guy, but can we talk a little bit about, I mean, David Ojabo, tore his Achilles.
Yeah, IDP Lives Matter. Yeah, the big news from Michigan's Pro Day when he tore his Achilles. A lot being made of the injury, how it was handled originally. There's a big video, you know, of course. It was like he went down and there's a video of the coach just walking by and not really acknowledging him. I don't really know what to think about that, because it's like, did he know he was hurt? Did he think maybe he was just like, he finished the drill and he was laying down? Was the coach even paying attention and saw what happened? You know, who knows? So I try not to make too much light of that. That doesn't really have any bearing on his NFL future. But the consensus seems to be that there's like a 2 years out minimum to return from, or to return to full effectiveness from an injury like this. And Achilles is an injury that takes around a year to recover and get back to action. But to get to full effectiveness, it's a long row to hoe. He has the advantage of being young. Obviously, he's in great shape as a soon to be professional athlete. But you know, lately it seems like this, kind of similar to ACLs, it seems like Achilles recovery time is beginning to shorten. I know they're working on different procedures to improve this. A lot of people like to point out Cam Akers coming back last season, which we have fun in the Next Man Up group chat between the three of us talking about how hyped up people get about Cam Akers, but he's really not that effective yet. But I mean, it's anecdotal evidence of exactly what we're saying here is, sure, you can get back on the field, but your effectiveness is going to kind of be in question. So similar to the Alabama receivers and their ACL recoveries, I would be cautious this season. You know, don't put too much weight on what he does this season. Look at it from a 2-3 year perspective, as we do with most things in Dynasty. But I'm going to say it's probably going to be a full 2 years before he's at 100%, really.
And one thing I want to bring up that I've actually been thinking about with all these guys is they are not with their respective team's medical staffs yet. So that plays a role too. They've been on this recovery process with Alabama team docs or whoever they used. They have not gotten in-house with their physical therapists that the NFL teams use, with the athletic trainers there, with the team doctors the teams use. And that all plays a role, because different doctors have slightly different philosophies on how all these injuries should be handled. There's a general consensus, but then once you really start breaking it down, one doctor may not want you to do this exercise for such and such length and stuff like that. So look for information more to be coming out after the NFL draft and after they really get in-house, and maybe reports start coming out over the summer, and we'll start getting a clearer picture of really where these guys are at.
Yeah, that is an excellent point.
a question for you two gentlemen. There's a lot of talk, like, when it comes to the differences between college and the NFL. Mm-hmm. People always say, oh, wait till the NFL coaches get a hold of them. They'll coach them up. I was listening to this on another podcast. When you get to the NFL, the coaches aren't going to walk you through a drill to teach you how to get better at your specific position. You're learning plays and you're running. Like, they might give you a hint or some tips, but they're not really getting into the nitty gritty. Now, a lot of college coaches don't either. Same thing with the weight staff, like strength staff. Most colleges have just as good as a weight program now, especially in the SEC, as NFL programs too. What about the training staffs? How are the training staffs from the college level compared to...
I must stop you right there. You better say athletic training staff before...
First off, athletic training. But other than that...
Just trying to protect you, JJ.
The athletic training staffs in college compared to the athletic training staffs... Isn't a trainer the same? No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I've seen your posts, Matt. I know
you're
the
good.
Difference.
You're good. I know.
But... are they discernibly better in the NFL, or?
So, yes and no. A lot of getting into the NFL in the athletic training world is very much who did you intern with and who do you know? Does that necessarily make them better athletic trainers? Not necessarily. But I will say they get to have more time with their athletes doing the rehab. So, like, personally, because I'm an athletic trainer, I work at a high school. I get just this influx of 25 athletes all needing their rehab done at the same time. And it's more like, here's your exercise, do it. I'll kind of keep an eye on you. Where the NFL, it's much more hands-on. We're making sure you're doing it right. Even at the college level, it's like that. Now at the college level, we get into salaries are not necessarily where they should be, and there's a lot more to it that I could go on and talk for an hour about that I won't, but so maybe people don't necessarily care as much when you're only making $32,000 a year compared to the NFL, where you're going to get a decent living.
$34,000 a year.
And so, yeah. As far as that goes, it's not like one athletic trainer might have better schooling or anything like that versus, but the resources they have, the time they have, all that plays a role, and they get to just actually focus on the athlete, you know, and they're not teaching classes as well. That plays a role.
Well, yeah, that even the teaching aspect, right? There's nothing else to distract them from the time they need to spend on their job. And there's not all these other ancillary jobs that you have exactly. to do as well.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you both. As always, I mean, you use words I don't know. I still don't know if you guys really are what you say you are, but you know the right words, and pretty much you've been right. So stick with these gentlemen. The Next Man Up podcast will start airing again.
That's right.
Right, come closer to the season.
Yeah, we don't have a set date yet.
Okay,
we've had some rumblings about maybe trying to do a little preseason roundup, but we may count this as that. We may do another one, add in a few other positions, a few other players.
Kind of review the veteran players that are dealing with stuff, like Bobby Trees that you mentioned earlier, and people
OBJ
like that.
Update things like that, but we'll certainly give some updates before we get going for the season, and then. Of course, during the season, we'll have our weekly updates. I know we've usually been doing those on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, so you're kind of getting all the news from the week before. So you kind of know what to look forward to as you're planning your lineups for the week.
And as I always say, the best part about their podcast is not even the fact that they give you the injury news you need, but they literally tell you who the next man up is.
That's right.
They don't stop at the injuries. They then go ahead and tell you who you should be starting in place of. Who your pickups should be. Well, gentlemen, thank you both. And as a nice bow on our rookie talk, Mr. Detweiler volunteered to come up with some fun draft day trivia for us. So, I am doing what is the hardest for me, and I'm turning over the reins to Mr. Detweiler.
Oh, you guys are going to love this. The first round of the draft in particular has seen no shortage of foibles throughout the years. And Kyle, I'm going to throw you the first one here.
Oh boy.
You're going to love this. What team missed their draft pick in the first round of the 2003 NFL draft?
Gosh.
They were number 7, ultimately picked at number 9 when two teams blitzed them to the table.
I don't know why my mind immediately went to it, because I remember like last year or the year before I had looked this up for something. I feel like it was the Minnesota Vikings.
You are correct, sir. Very good.
Let's go.
They were the laughingstock for a while, and it was 2 years in a row that they had a draft day snafu.
That's crazy. I had no idea that happened.
They were one of the teams that jumped somebody. Do we know who the teams were that jumped them?
The Ravens
and the Carolina Panthers.
I don't know why I felt like the Packers were involved in that. Maybe I was just thinking in the division.
It ultimately cost them Jordan Gross, who, okay, for those who remember, was an exceptional offensive tackle.
Was he?
Well, he was really good.
Hey, Don knows
played a long time. You don't know him, and that's how you know an offensive tackle was good.
That's right.
That's fair.
Who'd they end up drafting? Do we know?
They eventually took a defensive end that didn't pan out.
That's right.
Wah, wah.
That was before they fixed the salaries and they were trying to save money.
Good job.
Oh, nice. All right, Matt, you get the next one. We know that the quarterback position is the most commonly first overall picked position. Who was the most recent non-quarterback first overall pick?
Oh, he's thinking. He put both of his fingers to his temples. That's how you know. I may not be an athletic trainer, but that is completing the mandible temple circuit, which creates optimal blood flow for thinking.
It's true.
Matt, who is your answer to this question?
Wait until he finds out where the mandible is.
Isn't that the jaw?
I'm going to say, oh my god, I don't even
I'll make your life easier. He's a Cleveland Brown.
Oh, Myles Garrett.
There you go. That well played, sir. You got it.
Gosh.
I'll take half credit for that. I'll take half credit.
You get full credit.
All right, JJ, we'll give you the next one. What college or colleges have produced the most first overall draft picks?
All time. Well, I want to say Alabama, but I know Alabama for years was terrible.
You are correct.
I have to think of a team that's been kind of consistently good. So I'd have to think of somebody like Notre Dame, who's just been like hovering. But, and I think I might have saw the answer to this. So I wouldn't have guessed them. I'm going to go with Notre Dame.
You are correct, sir. That is one of three teams tied with 5. The other two, gentlemen, quick guess.
Oh, I looked it up. I can't.
Okay, never mind. It's the Trojans of USC and Oklahoma.
I would have got 2 of them. I would have said Notre Dame instead of USC.
Major programs, to be sure. All right, Kyle, back to you.
All right.
Since 2000, what position has been taken first overall most frequently that is not a quarterback?
Ooh.
Since 2000.
Is offensive line too generic? You said first overall or in the first line?
First overall.
Ugh. Other than quarterback. I mean, it's between defensive end and offensive line, I feel like. Flips a coin. Offensive line.
Oh, you were so close, but you did get both of them. Defensive end has happened 4 times. Mm-hmm. Offensive tackle has happened 2, and that's it. Since 2000, only 6 non-quarterbacks have been picked first overall.
Wow. Gosh.
That's a lot.
That failed me. Didn't work twice.
This is another fun one that has, well, you'll like the answers to this. What franchise, Matt, has made the most first overall draft picks?
What franchise has made the most first overall draft picks?
Okay, so it's got to be someone that
as in they've gotten the pick first overall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
they've been around for. I want to say the. You know what? I'm just gonna go with it. I'm gonna say Cleveland Browns.
So Cleveland Browns is the most common thing you would imagine, and it is not correct. They've had it 3 times. The winners have had it 7, and there are 2 tied for that. The Colts as a franchise,
okay,
including their early age in Baltimore, and then the move, and then the Rams in their various stops.
The Rams, wow.
I got to say, I wouldn't have guessed either of those teams.
Recency bias would have allowed me not to guess that as well.
And I know the Jets stink, but I know we never get the first pick.
Nope, so you're always just good enough not to.
The Jets are so bad they can't even suck right.
Wow, I've missed you on pods.
We know that this year's quarterback class isn't what it could be in terms of a historical consensus. So, JJ, I'm going to pose it to you. This year, over or under 2.5 quarterbacks in the first round?
Over. I'm going to go over, and I'll tell you why. I'm not just going to say over. Mm-hmm. Because the NFL is drunk with QBs. Now, looking back, what? Last year we had 5. The year before, 4, 3, 5, 3, 3. You have to go all the way back to 2015 to the last time only 2 went. And that was Jameis and Marcus Mariota.
Yeah. You knew that question was coming.
No, actually, I prepared for this because I was going to do the trivia before Don volunteered. So I have all my numbers. I have my spreadsheets.
I was like, that was an oddly specific set of statistics to answer that question just off the dome. I was like, wow, JJ knows a lot about the draft.
I do. But I was researching the draft to prepare. But
that's smart.
I think teams are really needy. And there's a couple teams that really need a quarterback and can't find one. Mm-hmm. So
there will be reaches for sure. Like,
well,
yeah,
there just is. There always is.
Well, my thought too is the you know, if one or two in the top 10 take a QB, then those teams that are kind of middling and it's like, we might need a quarterback, teams like the Panthers, where it's like, we have Sam Darnold, but we might draft a quarterback, might start to reach. And then it's, you know,
and then there's a lot of,
there's a run.
There's a lot of talk about like Detroit taking a QB 32 so they get that fifth year option.
That's the big deal. That fifth-year option and cost certainty for another season on the quarterback position if you get it right. All right.
Big if.
That's always the question. Kyle, this brings us back to you here.
All right.
Over under 6 wide receivers in this year's first round.
Talent pool's pretty deep. That's a even 6? You can't give me a
even 6. I'm not hedging it. No.
Ugh. So you can say over, under, or push.
Oh, yeah. I forget the push option. Oh, gosh. I'm going to go over. I think I'll go over.
Interesting.
Over slash push. If you would have said 6.5, I would have said under. But I don't know. I don't feel good about saying a push. I don't feel like it'll land right on it. I feel more confident saying over. I feel like there's a lot of teams that need receiver, and is
there are particularly at the back.
There's a lot of very good receivers, and I feel like when a run starts on a position like that, everybody's gonna be like, "Oh crap, we got to get the guy that we want." I mean, we talked about in the injury thing. We talked about 4 or 5. We talked about George Pickens at the beginning of this, and then there's several very, very talented receivers that we didn't even mention tonight. So I would not be shocked at all if it's 7 or 8.
Now, I was going to do the same question, Don, but mine over-under, because according to PFF, I looked at one of their latest mock drafts. They have 5 receivers going.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to set it at 4.5.
Oh.
I would have blasted
easily
that over.
Oh,
that's a straight over.
You set it at a much higher level.
I did.
I'm going to take push or under.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I haven't looked at a ton of mock drafts. So, I mean, I could be totally wrong, but just gut feeling, thinking about the talent pool and the teams that need receiver, I would not be surprised with an over.
Well, I mean, just naming them off, like, there's probably about 8 or 9.
London, Olave, Wilson,
Williams.
Burks, Jameson Williams,
Jahan Dotson.
Jahan Dotson.
What is it? Christian.
The real question is, do you think
what's his name?
Jahan Dotson, Christian Watson, or John Mechie, or even Pickens creep into the bottom of the first? So that's
possible.
Really the question.
It's always possible, though.
Depends on what kind of run happens at the top and in the middle, because there's a lot of teams at the bottom that need it. I mean, KC's got what, two picks right at the end of the round?
They do.
I doubt they'd take a receiver with both, but I bet they take at least one.
And there's
unless the they move up for late ones.
Yeah, unless they move up.
Yeah,
which if they move up, it may be to move up to get the one that they need. Green Bay needs it. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think if they move up, it'll be for an edge. They're
Lord knows a certain team at 21 could use it.
Yeah.
Your Patriots would certainly benefit from that.
Yeah, Devontae Parker. Like him. Don't know if it's enough.
Jacoby Myers, baby.
Hey, let's get it. It's the backup Myers QB. Season. Be careful with him.
All right, Matt, I got another one for you. Historically, what is the highest number of wide receivers ever to go in the first round?
Highest number ever?
Ever.
I'm going to say 9.
Ooh, that's a big one. You have overshot it, my friend. JJ, a swing?
Well, I'm looking at my numbers for the past 10 years. 6 was the most to go.
Yep.
So I'm going to go with 7 because Kyle's flashing either a gang sign or the number 7 to me.
It can be both, and 7 that's is correct. Guess.
7.
What year?
2004.
Ah, yes.
A certain Pitt Panther who's soon to tap dance his way into the Hall of Fame was the headliner of that.
Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, Fitzgerald.
I was a whopping 9 years old. I remember every moment.
Wait, 2004?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 2004. My God, I was an adult.
I was 11.
He went all fourth overall.
He had a mortgage and a 401k. That was an embryo.
Is it time to pound the table, Don?
It is, absolutely. Gentlemen, you get about 30 seconds to stomp the table for absolutely any player that you love in this class.
All right, so let me just get the rules. We have 30 minutes. No, seconds. No,
30 seconds.
That'd be too long. We just need a quick 30 minutes out of you guys. No. 30 seconds on the one rookie that you're most excited about.
That is correct.
Ooh.
All right, who's going first, Don?
Kyle, you can start.
Alrighty, well, I had to break out a prop for this one. Mine is this guy right here, number 4, James Cook out of the University of Georgia. Call me a homer if you want to. Go Dogs. I am excited to see what this man can do in the NFL. He may not be the highest ranked prospect out of the running backs, but he can do it all. He's a willing pass blocker. He can go out as a receiver at any position. He can line up in the slot, catch passes out of the backfield. He can run the ball. I think if there's a team that can get him with the right zone blocking scheme, he is going to be stellar in the NFL. Not to mention, he's got the pedigree with Dalvin Cook as his older brother. So he's got somebody in his ear that can tell him what he needs to do to succeed at the next level. I'm excited to see what he can do.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to laugh and interrupt your 30. It's funny when you talk about a running back and one of your attributes is he can run the ball.
He sure as heck can.
He is very sure doing the thing he is supposed to do.
Well, certainly.
Yeah, one
yes.
job.
He can catch the ball as well. He can block. He can do everything that you want a running back to do when they get to the next level. They're not going to have to teach him much. They just have to plug him in, let him learn the playbook, and he's ready.
So Kyle, what you're saying is he is basically Dalvin Cook 2.0, and he should be taken number 1 overall in rookie drafts. Can I get that on, confirmation on that?
I would say he's the younger brother to Dalvin Cook, and he doesn't have chronic shoulder or ankle injuries at this point in his career.
We'll take it.
Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Matt, you're up.
All right. Player I'm going with is David Bell. This guy was considered one of the top 3 receivers in this draft class. If you just go back a year ago, he's since fallen off because guess what? He ran in the 4.6s at the combine. This just in, people, that is still crazy fast, whether we think so or not. We've seen receivers time and time again run in the 4.6s. Heck, even Keenan Allen ran in the 4.7s. So it is possible to be a really good receiver in the NFL and still run slow. But going even further than that, this is a guy as a true freshman put up 1,000 yards at Purdue. It does not happen every day. And basically, if this guy is taken within the first 3 rounds of the rookie draft or this NFL draft, I am going to hammer him all day long, anywhere I can in the second round of rookie drafts.
Are we not doing phrasing?
I'm sitting over here
being
kind.
Exactly what I said.
Well, as long as you have a donor bone.
Well done, Archer. All right, JJ.
Well, protect that typhoid process.
You got to protect that typhoid process. It's on a bumper sticker on my stadium. I am tired of the slander on who I hope to be the newest Jet. That's right. It's Kayvon Thibodeau. Now, I know old guys like me don't like when the youngins like think about their brand or talk about how great they are. We want players like to be quiet and let the play talk for themselves. Well, guess what? Nobody in the past let their play talk for themselves. They all talked about it. We just didn't hear it because we didn't have social media. Thibodeau is an athletic marvel and has performed well throughout his college career. Don't buy into the nonsense. And if the Jets, Thibodeau, don't draft Kayvon, they will regret it.
Well played, sir. You can always trust JJ to understand the assignment. Well done, sir. I'm going to complete this by talking about a safety that's not the guy from Notre Dame. Michigan's Daxton Hall is an absolute baller. The guy can be moved into the corner spot position. He's athletic enough to go down into that nickel role and be a game changer all over the field. And if you need him to play free, he can do that too. He's an absolute game changer and a field flipper. Will take possession, the wide receiver capability there for a defensive back to catch the ball is unbelievable. Superior athlete, superior speed, and a weapon from the safety position. The pride of Michigan will take Hall.
Hey, another safety. Georgia guy, Sine?
Sine.
Louis Sine.
He's moving up the boards. I saw him like going in the late first round. Is there a chance of that?
Absolutely there is. He's an absolute thumper, more of a true strong safety, but can play that box linebacker spot in a hybrid role. A very cerebral player. Was a signal caller on the Georgia defense, which is saying something on that defense.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Outstanding tackler. Not the world's greatest coverage guy, but for a strong safety, that's fine. And yes, he has absolutely flown up draft boards. He's really crushed the interview process.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, gentlemen, it is time for tags where we can tell the riders where they can find us and any final thoughts and any projects we're working on. Kyle Allen.
Yeah, I'm not really active on Twitter anymore. If you want to follow my abandoned house of an account, you can follow me at kallen_4. There won't be much action there other than every week. I think the pod auto gets published to that account as well as our main account. So make sure you're following at Rider Dynasty and at Gridiron Ratings. Thank you guys for listening. Keep an eye out for the Next Man Up injury podcast coming to you just before the season and each week through the season so you can get your injury updates and make sure your lineups are ready to rock. Thank you guys for having me on this week. I really appreciate it. Look forward to joining back up throughout the season if we can.
Absolutely, Kyle. It was great having you. Matt.
You can find me on Twitter at Fantasy Fair. That's where I just go to talk fantasy football. That's pretty much all I use it for. I try really hard to only keep it to fantasy football there. And I think I do a pretty good job about that. So, you know, at me, ask me questions. I'm happy to answer. I do have one guy that messages me every now and then and asks for lineup advice. So it always makes me feel good when he does. And I shed a little tear, but you know, if more people did it, that'd be awesome too. So go ahead.
Don.
Guys, it's a 3-day weekend of being drunk on football starting on Thursday night. Enjoy the heck out of it. It's a spectacle. No league does it anywhere near as well as the NFL does. Imagine, there no one's going to touch a football, and we're going to spend 3 days of our lives glued to a set. Unbelievable.
Fantastic. You're absolutely right. No other sport can do it. Thank you, Don. Thank you for helping me put together this show. Matt and Kyle, it's great as always to see you. Kyle, especially, I haven't seen you in a long time.
Been a minute.
Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Be sure to check out the Gridiron Ratings Draft Guide available at our site, gridironratings.com. We will be back next week on Wednesday with our NFL Draft Recap. Check out Getting Defensive next Tuesday and Thursday, where we talk about the IDP rookies and their landing spots. And keep an eye out for the Devi Dirtbag, Ryan Bickerstaff's post-draft rookie mock coming up, should be next week. So from all of us to all of you, Be safe, be well, and as always, boat drinks, my friends, boat drinks.
And from the next man up, don't forget, the best ability is availability. Peace.
But as I said, boat drinks.